Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. And yeah, we do have a sports Vox Pop today. And as Ian pointed out, the Mets are winning. But the show's not about that, unless it goes extremely poorly. And then it'll be all about that. We have some great guests today. Mark McGuire is executive sports editor and columnist for the Daily Gazette in Schenectady, don't you know? He's been covering sports for as long as I can remember. I seem to recall Mark emailing and gloating during the first Giants-Pats Super Bowl that he covered. And I was just very irritated back in 2008 because this is great. Oh, I'm having a great time. And, you know, it really wasn't fair. And we'll talk about that. Also joined by our regular sports commentator, Keith Strudler. He's director of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication and a regular commentator here. Had a number of wonderful things to say about the Jets yesterday. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment on the Vox Pop page of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. Check in on Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Tweet us at WAMC Radio. Just use the hashtag Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org. I'll tell you in full disclosure that our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, not here today. She usually sends in the tweets and the Facebook posts. So if I'm slow with those, it's because I'm checking them myself. I will get your email fast, voxpop@wamc.org. But by all means, call. It's a call-in show, 1-800-348-2551. Mark McGuire and Keith Strudler, welcome back to the program, people.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
If you need help learning how to use that computer for the Facebook thing, we'll
it's the iPhone, right. But you know,
you've got buttons.
I like paper. I must confess, I like everything on paper. Yeah. I don't bring the device in unless I have to. Well, where to begin? What a great week. All right, so a federal judge put the NFL in a defensive over its 4-game suspension of New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady. During an open court session, Judge Richard Berman demanded to know from the league's attorney what evidence directly links Brady to deflating footballs and belittling the drama of the controversy. Daniel Nash responded there was considerable evidence Mr. Brady clearly knew about this, including records of text exchanges and phone calls in the scandal that is known as Deflategate. But he also said there was no smoking gun, showing Brady had direct knowledge that the balls were deflated during the AFC Championship game at Indy. Berman is now meeting with parties in closed-door sessions, I believe, at this hour, or at least today. The NFL sued 2 weeks ago, asking for Berman to declare that the 4-game suspension of Brady was was properly carried out. The players' union countersued, saying, no, you got to nullify the suspension. It's ugly, but it's more exciting than preseason football. Mark McGuire.
Yeah, we're all waiting for the real games because we've had enough of this. This is dragged on for 7 months now. There's a question of due process involved in this. We initially all believed Brady was guilty because it was the Patriots. If this involved another football team, we'd probably be less inclined to assume guilt because the Patriots have a stain of pushing the envelope of what is appropriate. It goes back to Spygate and their desire to win championships, which they've won in the past. But there is definitely a question of due process involved here and whether he was granted due process.
But as I understand the agreement with the Players Association and Goodell, he has the right to do this, right, Keith?
I believe so, and I don't want to get too far into the details because that's when I always get in trouble. But
right.
I do think, yes, there are two things that are overriding to me. One is Goodell has been criticized now on all sides for either underreaching or overreaching. And so I don't know exactly what the expectations are now with the handbook, where it has to be so explicit that everything, there has to be some kind of authority granted to the commissioner to be able to do these kind of things. What I keep coming back to on this, and I'm certainly no Patriots fan, is there, and I'm naive here, is there anyone in America that does not believe that Tom Brady knew what was going on? Obviously, there are, and they're all Patriots
fans.
Well,
he won't admit it, and I think he will go to his grave saying, I had nothing to do with this.
He might do that. And it seems as though the problem here was that, in the end, Roger Goodell overreached on the suspension. He wanted to send so strong of a – if he had said 2 games at the onset, we probably never would – this would not – maybe there'd be something because the Patriots are the Patriots, and they're so egocentric and narcissistic, but maybe this would have gone away. I
by the way, nice shot to a lot of the Patriots.
I'm sorry
fans
about
out there.
That. Very to all nice. People in the New England area.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mark, does this have an end game where that suspension changes? Yesterday, it seemed that the judge, at least from the accounts I read and from the hilarious courtroom sketches that I saw, the judge was sort of irritated with both parties, saying, work this out, but it seems that neither party wants to do anything.
They really can't budge at this point. It's if you're Tom Brady and you're saying, I'm innocent, I didn't do anything wrong, how can you negotiate a plea deal? And that's the position he's taken all along,
right,
regardless of what the public sentiment is. On the other hand, you have Roger Goodell, who can't do anything right, who probably did.
Except draw a paycheck, which is pretty
well,
fat.
Well, he does pretty well. And more importantly, the reason he draws that paycheck, the one thing he does do right in his defense, is he makes a lot of money for his bosses, which are the NFL owners.
Right. But at some point, this is bad for business for the owners.
Eventually it will be. I mean, the reason he got into this problem in the first place is he screwed up the Ray Rice suspension. So he said, well, I'm going to go overboard this time. He went overboard this time with the 4-game suspension. So he's going to try to stick to his guns. If they could work out through the court system, cutting it down to where it could look like a modest victory for the NFL, and it looks like Brady took on the NFL and won, whether that could be a fine, a 1-game suspension, that could possibly be the end game. Or this could blow up in the NFL's face. I don't see a scenario where this ends up being a 4-game suspension.
You know where it's really the big situation? Fantasy. People don't know where to draft Tom Brady right now. Oh, it's a huge story.
Well, fantasy's it's a pretty big deal, and there's
people
a lot of money changing
Tom
hands.
Brady, so it's
well,
really
if you're going to draft Tom Brady, you better draft Jimmy Garoppolo, is put him on your bench.
Yeah. You got to get
a backup. We have a phone line here, and Mike and Colony, you'll be first in a moment. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. This is an email that came in from Laura. Thank you, WAMC, and Keith Strudler for Keith's essay on your station essays. I teach entertainment and sports marketing, and every year students want to write a paper for my class and English on the topic of whether college athletes should be paid. I usually point the students to Keith's essays as a resource. How about that?
My work is done here. Who is that? I'm sorry. Do we have?
That's Laura, she says, on another note, I had the good fortune to talk to Leo Mazzone for about 2 hours in Cooperstown a few weeks ago. He does some work with high school kids. I asked if the kids listen to him, and he said yes, but sometimes the parents don't. He wants to teach the pitchers style and ways to save their arms and shoulders, and all some parents are interested in is how fast their child can pitch. And boy, ain't that the truth.
Let's go back to the first part of that comment.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah. Well, and again,
thank you, Laura.
You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And all right, let's take a call, and then we have some other topics because the Jets won't go away.
No.
And Mark, you know, full disclosure, first of all, Mark McGwire in his professional duties is not a homer. He will play it straight down the line. However, truth be told, he's a Jets fan, and he's sick about this.
You'll read all about that tomorrow.
All right, let's go to Mike and Colony. Mike, you're on.
Yes, I'm originally from Western New York and always a Bills fan. I think the media reports the Bills, New York's only football team, by the way. And I think they're missing out because the Bills are very popular in this area, and there are a lot of Bills fans, and yet I don't think it gets appropriate coverage.
And they're going to be pretty good this year, too, I think. And did you see, or we'll tie it all together here, Mike.
Yeah. I'll get some coverage right now.
Did you see that the Bills and Rex Ryan signed the guy who broke Geno Smith's jaw, I.K. Inampali, yesterday?
Well, I'm not.
You got the silent
support
tape,
of that, of course, but.
Yeah, it's the Bills actually did lead my sports section yesterday. It is you bring up a very interesting question because the Capital Region is very unique in terms of there are three NFL teams that have a large fan base here. It's Giants are clearly the number one fan base here, followed by the New York Jets. Then third would be the Buffalo Bills, and fourth, interestingly enough, and we'd really have to study it at length, I would say possibly the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I was going to guess that. Yeah.
And really?
Yeah.
Well,
actually, there's a lot of Pittsburgh.
New England.
Yeah, and that goes into surprisingly not the New England Patriots in terms of the Capital Region until you start going further east, and that goes beyond the Daily Gazette coverage area. But if you go into the eastern part fringe of the Capital Region, you start getting into Patriots country. But then you also have a whole plethora of fans, as you find anywhere. You can go to any sports bar on a Sunday and you'll see most NFL teams represented.
But do you think, Mike and our panelists, that maybe part of this is actual distance and the Meadowlands?
Yeah. Well, they haven't been successful in quite – I mean, when's the last time the Bills made the playoffs? They're the furthest – they have made the playoffs for a long time. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, but in the 80s, late 80s and 90s, was a dynasty that just never won at all.
I think the NFL is the most democratic of all the leagues. If you're good, you get coverage in the NFL. I mean, the Indianapolis Colts are one of the most popular or most covered teams in the country, and that's a small market. I mean, teams that's a team that has found a way to make its locations almost irrelevant, and they've become brands unto themselves. So the reality is, if the Bills were successful, the Bills would get a lot of coverage. Let's go beyond that. The Bills, if you want to look at market size, Bills are a tiny, tiny market. Beyond Jacksonville and New Orleans.
So are the Green Bay Packers. And they get a little bit of coverage.
You know, anecdotally, I know a lot of Bills fans. And they do get coverage on sports broadcasts and, to some extent, the newspapers as well. I mean,
And in defense of Mike as well, my late father, a Long Island guy through and through, was the biggest Buffalo Bills fan I ever met.
Really?
He was scarred when the Brooklyn Dodgers moved to L.A.
Yeah, my dad too.
And so when the Giants and Jets moved to New Jersey, he said, I'm going to root for New York's team.
All right.
And he became a Bills fan.
Well, when do we get to call them the Toronto?
No. Do not do that to Buffalo Bills fans.
I just visited Toronto.
I respect them.
And on that happy note, thank you, Keith. We'll take a break. Vox Pop. It's sports. It's 1-800-348-2551. Many great things to talk about, including the Jets. J-E-T-S. Jets. Spells trouble.
Support comes from Ashokan Center, a classroom in the wild where nature inspires conferences, festivals, family celebrations, and outdoor education for schools. AshokanCenter.org. Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York. Locally owned, installing solar panels, solar hot water, solar pool heating. ApexSolarPower.com for information. Planned Parenthood, Mid-Hudson Valley. For over 80 years, advocating for policies that will protect women's rights into the future. PPMHV.org for more information. The Hyde Collection, Glens Falls. This summer, featuring the late drawings of Andy Warhol, 1973 to 1987, organized by the Andy Warhol Museum, one of the Carnegie Museums of Pittsburgh, HydeCollection.org. Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StoneSoupConcrete.com and on Facebook. And Poughkeepsie Farm Market, hosting the Summer Institute for Educators using school gardens to teach August 18th through the 21st, farmproject.org for registration.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. Every now and again, we'll do a sports show, and today we are joined by Keith Strudler, who is director of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication and our regular sports commentator here on WAMC. Also, for the first time in a while, Mark McGuire, who is the executive sports editor of the Daily Gazette and a columnist as well. And this one came in via email. It is from Bill, who says, I have no idea if you'll be able to answer it. What is the total subsidy in the form of tax exemptions or other forms that New York State taxpayers give to New York pro sports teams? And that's from Bill.
Oh, it'd be impossible, because that's going to come in so many different forms in terms of them being allowed to have building a train station in front of the Yankees, you know, giving them that for free. But to be honest, first of all, it's an unknowable. Second, I don't think it's nearly as large as you see in some other states. You know, there are places that have worked very hard to keep teams. Tennessee, for example, when they brought in the Titans. Houston, when they had the Texans come back.
Walker in Wisconsin just signed a bill that commits $250 million in taxpayer money for a new arena for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, as long as union workers don't build it.
Yes.
Right.
So I think commentary.
Yes. While I'm sure that New York State has provided ample subsidy for our sports teams, I don't think it's nearly of the percentage that you would see in some other states. So I don't know that you'd have to go to an economist.
One of the reasons why is you're not going to have teams use other cities as leverage to move from New York. The Yankees aren't going anywhere. The Mets aren't going anywhere.
Exactly.
The Bills are another matter.
I think the Bills are not going anywhere.
I'm surprised. I think the time. Look, I think San Antonio is long overdue for a professional football team, and that would have been an easy move for anyone. It looks obviously Los Angeles is going to get a team. It looks like there's still a couple teams.
I don't understand that. I mean, they've tried in the past, and the LA Rams were good for a while, and they were popular for a while, but it's
the confluence of factors in Los Angeles, which is, one, they do not provide much public subsidy. This is why you've seen so many old baseball stadiams in California, because very few – it's really hard to get that legislation, too. It always comes to a public referendum, and it always loses. So you have to find a lot of financial backing from the private sector. And in the case of Los Angeles, besides the fact there's way too many things to do there and the fans don't necessarily care, there were too many competing factions. You had all these different factions that had their own municipalities and their own plans. And was it going to be in Anaheim, or was it going to be in Los Angeles? Was it going to be here? Was it going to be there?
Yeah.
And you know, the mayor would get involved. I'm going to use the Coliseum. I'm going to use it as a stepping stone to get the next Olympics. When you have all these competing factions, look, the team in Houston was supposed to be in Los Angeles. The Texans were supposed to be in Los Angeles. And Houston came in with a shovel-ready project and said, we'll give you whatever you want. Build it here. I mean, LA should have had a team 15, 20 years ago.
And there's also the ancillary revenue that's involved. I mean, look where the NFL Network is based. And it's L.A. It's going to be – they're going to be putting two teams there. There'll be two teams there. It comes down to San Diego, and San Diego franchise seems hell-bent on getting out of San Diego.
Now, I wonder why. I mean, they make money. They're successful,
old
right?
Old stadium.
It's falling
no
in.
Revenue streams come in that way. And still, the fan base is – it's not a huge city. It's not a huge market. In the end – you know, if you look at the millions of people just a couple hours up the coast, you can keep your fan base from San Diego and move 2 hours north. Now, the interesting question will be the second team. Do you think that would be they're going to bring the Rams back?
That's going to be the question that comes back and forth. The Rams obviously want to move to L.A. The Raiders actually have a history in L.A.
Yeah, and it didn't work out.
It worked out for a bit. It could have worked out for a bit. We're talking Al Davis.
Nothing's going to work out. But it's an interesting question that of bringing two teams from the same division into one stadium.
They may have to move. They may have to realign.
Yeah.
They may have to realign, which they've done in the past.
Would they be willing to do that just to bend over backwards to get two teams in L.A.?
Well, I mean,
is it worth it?
Oakland's
not a good market. Oakland, I mean, they are a second-tier city playing in an awful stadium. And look, anyone who has friends or family out in that area with kids say, I won't take my kids to those games anymore. So, you know, they used to get by on the value of the Shield and in terms of affinity sales and everything that came with it. They're no longer one of America's favorite teams. They were for generations. I mean, you've been covering sports forever. You can remember the days when they were the Dallas Cowboys.
Absolutely.
And they're not.
It sickened me in the 70s. As a Giants fan, and the Giants were awful in the early and mid and late 70s, there were a lot of Vikings fans, and there were a lot of Raiders fans. And it annoyed me greatly.
Yes.
But they were eminently watchable.
There were no cell phones.
And
we all drove horses and...
Right you are. Keith Strudler is our guest, also Mark McGuire. Number to call here on a sports edition of Vox Pop is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. There. We've got through 26 minutes of the program and haven't mentioned Geno Smith getting his jaw broken more than once. So set the stage for me, Mark McGuire.
It had to be the Jets.
It had to be the Jets. But, and again, I don't have the latest, but this was about a $600 plane ticket?
Unused plane ticket.
$600 unused plane ticket. Geno Smith was supposed to go to IK Annapolis camp. By the way, could anyone have pronounced his name on Monday?
No.
No?
I thought it was Ike.
They dropped the E from Ike.
I've been a Jet fan since 1972, and I could not pronounce his name as a Monday. Now, here's where it gets dicey. There was a legitimate reason why he didn't attend a camp. Geno Smith had a death of a close friend, a motorcycle accident. But then he did not... reimburse him for the money, and then there was a confrontation. Now what we're hearing is reports that Geno Smith got confrontational about not returning the money, and now we're hearing reports that he wagged his finger in Annapolis' face. No one deserves to get punched in the face and have his jaw broken, but there seems to be some precipitating factors involved.
So in other words, initial reports were he was sucker punched. Now the definition of sucker punch could be a little bit amorphous. However, generally speaking, it's you're standing there minding your own business and someone punches you in the face.
Yeah, this is something where this gets into really interesting semantics. Sucker punch, as you describe, is no one comes out of nowhere.
Right.
What it's more likely is Smith did not expect this to escalate into a physical confrontation, and he just got his lights knocked out by a
Which he doesn't deserve, yeah. by the way.
Which no one deserves to get punched out, but it certainly seems he was an active participant in the confrontation.
So the question I have about this, underlying this, and putting into context the fact that Rex Ryan waited about 12 seconds nice. To sign this guy.
But my kind of guy.
Well, the question is Geno Smith, in fact, not a well-liked character in that Jets locker room?
I think Geno Smith's days as a potential starter with the Jets are over.
Really?
Absolutely. And it's because of what you just touched on. Where were his teammates in the confrontation? Do you think anybody gets
Well, we don't know.
That's the whole point, though. Do you think if there's a verbal confrontation in the Patriots locker room, do you think anyone gets a chance to lay hands on Tom Brady? Do you think there's a chance for anybody to lay hands on Aaron Rodgers in a locker room? That gets broken up well before it could possibly escalate to a physical confrontation. It doesn't happen. Do you think Tom Brady or an Aaron Rodgers or an Eli Manning puts himself in that position where that could happen?
Well, I was going to say Ryan Fitzpatrick, he may not be a great quarterback, Harvard graduate, 48 on the Wonderlic, smart enough to stay away from angry linebackers.
There you go.
There'll be some judgment. There you go.
By the way, who has a criminal history in his past yes. of duking out with cops
in college. You pay the man.
Oh,
pay
really?
The man, Charlie.
Yeah, this guy has a history.
And yet Rex Ryan said this guy is a good citizen, and he's great in the community, and he's great in the locker room.
Let's be real. This is Rex Ryan giving the finger to the Jets.
Yes. Getting a little press for himself.
Yeah, this is, Mike, this is, you know, the Bills are going to get more press thanks to Rex Ryan, whether they win or lose. This is part of the gambit. But this really goes to the heart of, again, let's keep reiterating, he doesn't deserve to get his jaw broken, but this actually goes to decision-making skills. And decision-making skills that you make off the field can translate to decision-making skills you have on the field. And the fact that lack of leadership, of being able to do the right thing, whatever that right thing is to defuse that confrontation, goes a long way to earning respect in the locker room, being able to lead a team. And so far, Geno Smith missing meetings in San Diego, getting into an altercation on a plane, getting into verbal altercation with fans. He has not shown he has the necessary leadership skills to lead a team. And the fact he hasn't lit it up on the field, I think it's time for the Jets to turn the page.
Well, what's interesting about this confrontation is we're very used to skirmishes in training camp. They tend to be cases of what we call overconformity. People want so badly to make the team and to show that they're tough that they go above and beyond. They follow the rules to the extreme. I'm going to get the extra hit. I'm going to play hard. And those are largely encouraged. Everyone's like, yeah, another fight in training camp. Those are cases of overconformity, saying I will do anything I have to make this team to please my coaches. What's so unusual about what we saw here is we hardly ever see cases of what we see called underconformity. People kind of giving the finger to the rules. In training camp, everyone follows the rules. Those fights in training camp are actually extreme cases of following the rules, showing that you want to give anything for the team. The number of coaches that say, these fights in camp, they were really good for us. They brought us together. That's what they said.
Yeah.
It's so unusual that you have a player, and this probably speaks to Geno Smith, that he cares about him so little that I am willing to throw away my career. Anyone who's ever thought about football in their entire life knows that if you hit a quarterback in the face without a helmet on, you're going to get fired. That's what's going to happen to you.
But as long as Rex Ryan's around, you'll get rehired.
Suppose if your former coach is as crazy as you are, then you're fine.
And here's a question I want to throw out to, you know, non-Jet psychopaths.
Okay, which is pretty much everyone but you.
Everyone else listening. Yeah.
Right. Why does it keep happening to this team? Why do things like this keep happening to the Jets? And I examine this in the column tomorrow. And I got to admit, I'm stumped. I mean, the when you hear butt fumble, that's the Jets. When a Bill Belichick resigns on a napkin, day after getting a job as HC of the NYJ, that's the Jets.
That's kind of sexy. It's like the way you get a job offer on a napkin.
And,
cool.
And he resigned from it. When you have the fake spike, that's the Jets. And it's been different ownership. It's been different players. It's been different front office staffs. But these weird things keep happening, and I'm not really sure. The constant has been the name of the team and me. So I'm getting a little paranoid.
Oh, I think we, you know, yeah. So this could be a reason to believe in God. But do you not think that there, because there has to be some explanation, but
it
do
is.
You not think that there is an underlying culture around organizations that's pervasive? And I understand the players are different, the coaches are different, but it does come from the very top, from the head.
Yeah, but the head also changed.
The head changed. The ownership
has
changed.
But
this is getting to be like a therapy session.
I did touch the Stanley Cup Monday, so maybe that had something to do with it.
Ah, that was a great tweet. And we're joined today by Mark McGuire and Keith Strudler. It's a sports edition. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. This one came in via email at voxpop@wamc.org. This is from Mark. Good afternoon, he begins. This year's recent NBA draft had many wonderful players coming out from places like, the University of Kentucky and Duke University, among others. So how is it that the great Phil Jackson of the New York Knicks drafts an unknown player from Eastern Europe? What's going on with the New York Knicks? Why are they so bad? Thanks, Mark. Discuss.
We don't know. Here's the thing. We don't know. I mean, there was such a rush to judgment on that pick. I'm not defending the pick, and I'm not denouncing the pick. He may be a bust, and there have been a long legacy of European athletes who are busts, but there have been an enormously long and longer history of American college athletes who are busts. The number of players that come into this league that stick, that are really successful, is pretty small percentage-wise.
Yeah.
There are a lot of really bad draft picks.
Well, I think we have to wait on this kid. Everybody says he is a unique talent, although he doesn't appear like he has any meat on his bones at all.
He's also a kid. And Porzingis was the logical pick at 4. As a way after Okafor was gone, and there really wasn't anyone else in that slot to select. And you know something, he more than held his own in summer league. He is very young. He is a great shooter. He actually showed some tenacity, which is unusual for European players. They're usually considered soft and outside shooters, but he actually showed some tenacity on the defensive end in terms of blocking shots, getting rebounds. So, Summer League, a lot of Knicks fans were actually saying, okay, we're less likely to jump off a ledge. You know, the Knicks aren't going to be, what's the word, good next year, but, you know, let's see what happens in a couple of years.
Or a basketball team, a professional-looking team.
Well, one thing, if Phil Jackson got this right, then he is a true genius.
Yeah, but I mean, and they would, and Mike, I'm sure you'll agree, Knicks would have traded from that spot if they could have gotten value. They certainly, if they could have gotten traded down, they would have. But, from all indications, there was no one that was willing to give them real value for the fourth pick, because everyone knew once you got through about 3 players, there really wasn't. It was a crapshoot.
Okay.
And they took the best they had.
We are joined by Keith Strudler and Mark McGuire. This came in from Colleen via email, who asks, I wonder how many female listeners think sports is a great topic for a whole show. Ugh. Let's go to the phones. Gina and Rhinebeck.
That was my wife, by
Gina,
the way.
You're
that
on.
There you go. Nice, Gina.
Hi, Gina.
Hi, you guys. First of all, I have to commend you.
Thank you.
That
Thanks.
Never happens.
I'm not sure what's what for, but thank you.
At elevating the level of discourse on it.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no, no. Get Gina back on.
I never would have thought we would have Scott Walker and union labor discussed on sports radio. But here, I just wanted to ask this, and I'm driving, so I'll hang up. But what are your thoughts on the U.S. women's national team winning the World Cup as opposed to how poorly the men have played since then, and how that the increased level of soccer attention in America is going to impact football down the road?
I think those are all great questions.
Wow.
Another great question before you go is, how is it that the women's national team makes so much less than the men's? And I know Keith and I talked about that last time, but you want to hang up or you want to hang in there, Gina?
Well, I had my son lecture me on that because I was complaining about that the entire time during the World Cup. And he said, proportionately for the amount of money that they raise, now the money that they raise is the issue. How much money they're paid from the network is the issue, because proportionately the money that they got is higher than what the men get. But that's just because the men get so much more.
Yeah, but more people were watching that women's final than watching any men's soccer games.
So hopefully that translates down the road.
Hopefully that will change.
More people watch the women's final than watch the men's final. Now, in all fairness, and I've been watching the growth of women's sports and men's sports for a long time, if the men could ever reach a final of the World Cup, the numbers would be I don't want to say Super Bowl numbers, but you'd see some. You'd certainly see above BCS championship numbers. You'd see some ridiculous numbers. So there isn't. Part of the problem lies in, if you look at the Women's Professional Sports Soccer Association, or the professional league that they have, I think, you know, players are making somewhere in the neighborhood of $25,000 a year. They're drawing, most teams are drawing maybe 2,000 fans a game, and that's if they have a you know, star player on their team. The market right now, outside of these championship events, isn't there. And that's not a condemnation. There are some fantastic female athletes. Obviously, they're the best in the world right now. Unfortunately, in America, that market isn't there. There's probably a lot of reasons for it, you know, which goes deep into the sociology of sport and gender in this country. But it's also kind of driven by the fact that American soccer has been buoyed by the fact that Americans have now grasped European and foreign soccer and really taken it on. If you walk around, like my kid is a great example, my almost 8-year-old, he loves Premier League soccer, loves it. I mean, loves it as much. He would rather wear a soccer jersey, a men's Premier League soccer jersey, than an NFL or baseball jersey at this point.
That's unfortunate.
As an old schooler, this wounds me very much.
But it is happening. You know, we've been waiting for the soccer revolution, and it's happening.
I think it's here. You think that they're drawing? I see it in the kids in our town. They're drawing away from playing football.
It's happening.
And are totally going to soccer.
This is someone who went through this the revolution in the 70s. That wasn't real. This is different.
Hey, Gina, we got to take a break here, but thank you
so
much for your call.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Gina.
Appreciate it very much. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Back. We'll hit the home stretch with Mark McGuire and Keith Strudler and you in a moment.
Support comes from Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston. RhinebeckArt.com. The Honest Weight Food Co-op, 100 Waterville Ave, Albany, New York, specializing in local and organic produce, natural groceries, fine cheeses, locally raised meats, and ready-to-go organic meals. HonestWeight.coop. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services in a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenAndPerrin.com. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, presenting HI Jew Positive, The Search for Love and Identity by the Jews of Poland, Sunday at 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai. SaratogaJewishCulturalFestival.org for details. And Mass Mocha in North Adams, Massachusetts, presenting indie punk singer-songwriter Ted Leo in concert on August 21st and the Fresh Grass Music Festival September 18th through the 20th. MassMocha.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. It's Sports Today, and we have been joined and continue to be joined by Keith Strudler, who is director of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication, and Mark McGuire, who is executive sports editor of the Daily Gazette and a regular columnist. Be sure to watch for his column tomorrow when he vents his spleen about the Jets and how difficult it's been being a Jets fan all these years.
Just looking for answers.
But you're also a Mets fan, and they're doing pretty good.
They're up 9-3.
9-3 at the moment?
9-3 in the bottom of the eighth. It was an early matinee.
You know, Citi Field, now I boycotted Citi Field last year.
Why?
Because the Mets, and because of Bernie Madoff, the Mets were unwilling to spend, and to some extent, that's the excuse they used, were unwilling to spend money. And I said, okay, the last two times I have gone, I went with my father-in-law and my son, and it was about $500 between the tickets and the parking.
Are you guys eating caviar? Or
No. You get a couple of beers and have a hot dog and see how much it runs.
You're living.
You're
going to
go down Sunday. No. You'll know.
You'll figure it out.
But
I've been there, but I don't spend like you do. Obviously.
The point is, I boycott. Well, my son eats a lot. I boycotted last year, but the two times I went before that, Citi Field was like a morgue. It was dead. The only noise that I heard were from Philly fans who were playing the Phillies both times. Citi Field is starting to rock. And the old days of Shea in the early 70s that I remember from a little kid and from the 80s when I was a grown-up going to games, it was a crazy, you know, thought Shea was going to fall down. And it seems like Citi Field is now turning that corner.
It's starting to feel right. And the shaking part is not apocryphal. It literally, the upper deck
shake. Oh, it really did.
There were two times where I actually feared for my life, and that was one time was when Todd Pratt hit the home run to win the divisional series against Diamondbacks, and one time when Andy Chavez made the catch in the...
Were you there for that?
I was there for that. And made the
we were there the night before, game six, we were there.
It was absolutely thrilling and at the same time terrifying because I thought I was going to die.
Yet, you know, if Citi Field starts to show that energy, all the players, and I still don't know, Keith Strudler, the psychology behind this, but all the players say they feed on it.
On the fan?
Yeah.
I firmly believe that, especially in the throes of a 162-game season. You need some juice to get yourself through that. And I think I'm amazed that you two can sit here and get excited about any one particular game you are about this game.
Well, remember, there have been some lean times for the
Mets. I know,
Mets.
But I mean, that's why I've never been a big baseball fan. It's hard for me to maintain that attention. But I firmly do believe that we talk about the Pirates a little bit. You guys remember the Pirates back in the 70s when they won. There was, you know, anytime I hear, you know, Sister Sledge, I still think about
Willie Stargell waddling
and
out
that
there.
That was a city that really, you know, was picked up by that team. A city was in the you know, the real throes of bad times.
Boy, they tormented us back in those days.
I do think, though, that fan environment can very much buoy a team.
So in a home court situation in basketball, I guess it's the same thing. I always wondered why that home court advantage was so much. And it really there has to be a certain amount of energy that comes from the home fans.
Sleep in your own bed, too. Sleep in
your
own bed.
Okay, you make a point. All right, back to the phones we go. Let's go to Evelyn in Albany. Evelyn, you're on.
Okay. Maybe this will be for Mark. I'm not sure. Recently, the Valley Cats played a team called the West Virginia Black Bears. And I was wondering what the hometown of the Black Bears was.
Well, we can look that up for you.
I think they play out of Morgantown.
Oh, okay.
That is one of the. I think it's the longest road trip.
And they're not jetting, presumably.
They're not. You do not right. jet.
Well, that's the north. Well, Morgantown's the northern part of the state, but that's.
But it's still. And I think we're looking at. We are furiously Googling right now, but it is a long road trip, and usually a long road trip is. For the New York Penn League is going down to Brooklyn, but that is an entirely different animal for them.
It is Morgantown.
It is Morgantown.
Wow,
so that's
good call.
That's 3 points for me, and I take the lead as we go into the home stretch.
Right. Evelyn, do you go to many Valley Cats games?
No, but you know, I stay home and cheer. It's like I'm a U Albany graduate. I stay home and cheer. Class of 68, whoever thought we'd be a jock school.
Yeah, about that. It changed very quickly.
Let's not get carried away here.
It's actually become a jock school. I mean, it gets overlooked, but, you know, we talk about very much Siena basketball and Union hockey and you also have U Albany field hockey, which is a Final Four team. You have U Albany lacrosse, which is, there's... It's a jock school.
Evelyn, I should tell you that Keith Strudler never fails to get a shot in on U Albany.
No, that's unfair. But yes, they have. There's been a transformation in the Sunnis, obviously, all of whom used to be Division III and really made a commitment to Division I athletics. I think largely because they were tired of losing their student body to Penn State and University of Maryland.
Yeah.
So they strategically changed.
Evelyn, thanks a lot for the call.
Before I go, I lived in West Virginia, and the only minor league team I ever knew about was the Charleston Charlies. Now, I don't even know if they're still in business. But
it's a great name.
It's been a while since I've been there.
That's a great name.
And another, if I can.
Sure.
American Pharoah coming to Saratoga, yay or
great,
nay?
Great question. We will find out probably Sunday.
That is
what Bob Baffert is saying. He does have a stable in waiting at Saratoga. Stay tuned. Sunday is going to be a very critical day.
What's your gut on that?
My gut is he's coming.
Mark?
He's going to come to Saratoga.
My gut is my life's going to get very busy if he comes.
Hey, Evelyn, thanks for the call.
Okay. Thank you very much for the info.
Bye now.
I just want to know if I was a team in Charleston, it would be the Chews.
Charleston Chews. Yes, very nice. Let's go to Mike in Glens Falls. Mike.
Hi there. I think the NFL is missing a rather obvious solution to Deflategate, and I would recommend they do the same thing with the footballs that Major League Baseball does with the baseballs, that they put them in possession of the officials for the pregame stuff so nobody can mess around with them. Make the ball boys or ball people employees of the league rather than employees of the team.
Yeah.
And you don't have anybody messing with the football.
All right, you got to stop with the common sense, Mike.
Everybody's nodding in here, Mike.
Literally, it's the most, yeah.
It does. If you go into a if you go into an umpire's locker room, and I was actually in an umpire's locker room for Valley Cats a couple weeks ago for a column, they'll have 6-7 dozen baseballs, and they're rubbing it up with the mud that they put on baseballs before games. They're in charge of the balls before the game. There's no reason why the officials can't be in charge of the footballs before the games. It's a very common sense approach.
It's nuts that they have two sets of balls. I just don't understand this. Why don't they do it like we do it, you know, at home? So apparently the Mets just scored.
It's 12-3 now, so we're high-fiving
Sorry about that. We're just
in the way of this viewing party.
We're just high-fiving a Juan Ligar.
But, Mike, you make a great idea, and I suspect that anything that simple would have to go through a lot of hoops and a lot of agreement with the Players Association and the league.
You need some committees. We can't do this without a couple
Absolutely.
Committees.
Absolutely.
You
know?
It'll have to be
it's
negotiated.
It's also time to fire Roger Goodell. He's a horse's patoot.
All right, I'm glad you caught yourself there.
Well, I'll tell you what, he will be fired as soon as the owners are not making a gazillion dollars a year.
Which will be in 2074 or somewhere around that.
Thank you, Mike. I disagree with you. I think he'll go sooner rather than later.
If it becomes too much of a drain on the league's image, and it has to be where they're forced to do so, perhaps.
If he looks incompetent, and he's starting to look like a cartoon character.
I think it would have to be something that goes outside of the field of play, though. It would have to be something that involves either domestic abuse or something that involves a steroid problem. Something. It's not going to be because, you know, he suspends a quarterback. I think there are things that a concussion issue, if they cover something up, they... Now I'm looking at an Albany mascot.
Yeah, while we were speaking, Ian Pickus sent the Albany mascot to Keith Strudler.
I'm not a bad person. I don't think that I have in any way disparaged.
Oh,
now, I do know.
Really?
I do know, though, if I'm not mistaken, I've been told by
Ian,
you guys
yeah.
that the Great Danes will be playing at Marist this year.
Really?
Basketball. I believe that's true. And I'm ready to host everyone down there.
You know what? That has to happen.
I will get you the best seats in the house.
You'll be so embarrassed at the end of that
you
game.
You want to be in the locker? I'll get you an introduction to the coach.
You know what?
Forget the over-under. It's over.
It's over. But we will talk, and we will get Pickus down
there. Can we do a
feature
in the paper? This is going to be a big game.
Non-committal. Non-committal from Mark McGuire of the Daily Gazette. Let's go back to the phones.
It's a great story.
Andrew in Great Barrington. Andrew.
Oh, hello. I was just thinking the other day, talking with a friend of mine, we were talking about how it's kind of depressing when you find out that people have done steroids.
Yeah.
Now it kind of, takes away a lot of their, achievement or whatever. So we were also talking about then that what if we allowed steroids? Wouldn't that just elevate every sport, everything that much more?
Well,
The scores be just that much higher and
Mark,
entertainment value
Mark,
be that
go
much
ahead.
More.
There's a couple issues involved there. If you notice, when an NFL player gets busted for steroids or performance-enhancing drugs or substances, and they're not very specific about it, but we know it's steroids, you notice how people don't get really upset? We don't go crazy about it as was posed in baseball. And one of the reasons we get upset is because it skews the numbers, because we're very
and it's a numbers-oriented game.
And it's a very numbers-oriented game, and it skews the historical context of the game, which is why the numbers from the 90s and the 2000s are so historically askew.
Or the pre-dead ball era.
Or the pre-dead ball era, exactly. But at least we can point to exactly everybody was playing on the same level playing field. The other issue involved is if you were to allow steroids, you're creating a trickle down where you're creating a major health risk for younger people. Adults can take the risk. You know, if you want to be a professional baseball player and take that risk, and you can do so legally, fine. But you
That's
don't want to have.
I was just talking about it as just more of like an entertainment sort of.
Wow. Oh yeah. Oh, we all remember. Hey, 1998. It was great to have the name Mark McGuire. Everybody loved him.
There's a multitude of issues that come along with the steroids. Let's start with the fact that in the end, when we start talking about performance-enhancing drugs, we're on a slippery slope to start. So what we define as a performance-enhancing substance changes daily, and with synthetics coming into the market, it's increasingly increasingly difficult to figure out what's fair and what's not. The argument to allowing anything is there is no right or wrong anymore. It's just an arbitrary line down the middle. But I think part of the anger, and I think in baseball you're right, it is very much that this is the antithesis of what baseball is supposed to be. But it's in other sports too. In cycling, Lance Armstrong went from being the greatest American hero of all time to being one of the worst people in the world for doing what everyone else he raced against was doing and what we all should have long ago realized that. So there is this notion of if you're not fair and you're not honest, you can't be my hero anymore. And
I love the idea of everyone being, you know, training and actually having to push the limits of their physical own body to the limits, you know, but
they still do when they're taking steroids. I mean, that's one of the misnomers.
Well,
when
I mean, like steroids, separating. What if you separate the leagues? Maybe, you know, there's just go hog wild.
That's why you're going to see a lot of love next year when Ken Griffey Jr. goes into the Hall of Fame. Because there's been never any accusation.
No whispers, not a thing.
Not a thing.
Do you believe that? I know I'm not accusing anyone of anything.
Thanks,
but these are always the hypotheticals. I don't believe, and I'm kind of this perception that at this point we can just assume all guilty until proven innocent. I know that's not fair. But do you believe that there is a legacy of clean athletes who have set who have achieved great things in the last? I mean, you've covered.
I do believe there is a large percentage of athletes who played clean. I believe there are athletes who achieved greatness clean. Barry Bonds, for most of his career, was clean. The reason he got on roids was he was upset with what McGuire and Sosa were doing. When he was with the Pirates,
he was a
fantastic
wiry
MVP.
Kid.
He was an MVP ball player.
I don't believe that there, and I have no evidence, but I don't. Well, actually, there's a lot of evidence because most of them have failed tests. There hasn't been a single sprint record probably set in the last 25 years, you know, in track and field that hasn't been aided by performance. And most of them have been caught, or some have actually died. So I mean, there are some sports, cycling. You can't give out a Tour de France trophy anymore. Because they're going to take it away eventually. So there are some sports where I literally don't think there has been a clean champion in generations.
I love this show. We have been all over the place. Let's go a different direction and go to Bill in Albany. Bill, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Over the years, there have been upsets. Douglas versus Tyson, Jets versus Baltimore Colts, U.S. hockey team versus Russia, and the Boston Red Sox winning the World Series after coming in last place the previous season. Siena basketball versus Duke basketball this coming season.
Okay.
So why are they
Let's
playing?
Let's go Saints.
Mark, is there someone on Siena that's got North Carolina ties? Do you know how that got scheduled?
Well, Jimmy has ACC roots, but it's great. It's great scheduling because when you come from a conference like the MAC, or you come from America East with UAlbany, it's not a two-bid conference. So you got to win your conference. To get into the NCAAs. So do you want to play up? You want to play your best competition possible. It doesn't really, your one-loss record isn't going to really matter except for perhaps seeding. Could they beat Duke?
I mean, anything.
Well, anything can happen on any given day.
I mean, Okafor's not there anymore. All right, Duke's down. They only probably have six McDonald's All-Americans now.
Sure.
Okay,
how's
good.
That?
All
I'll
right,
go with sure.
You're on the record. Quickly to Leon. Leon, you have about 30 seconds.
First of all, the problem with the kids taking drugs is just as bad as with a football player as it is with a baseball player, the trickle-down. I mean, I don't know why we give the football players a pass on that.
Good point.
Second, I think the Jets are. I think a lot of what's wrong with the Jets is their market, the media attention. I mean, the butt fumble. The guy was blocked into him. That, if you look at the replay of that play, that guy that he ran into was blocked into him. I mean,
all right, fair enough.
It's not that thing. If there was anywhere but New York, you would never hear about it again.
Thank you. A point I make in the column tomorrow is. Do we overplay these incidents because it fits into the narrative? And that's one of the questions I have as a fan, I have as a writer. And I think part of the answer is yes. Then again,
but
have you seen that happen with any other team, though?
But part of you deep inside says, well, I love this. I'm a Jets fan, and this can only happen to my team, and I love this.
It's, you know, something I want to win. I want to win a Super Bowl as if I'm a player, but I don't mind using the I and we stuff. but at the same time, it's part of our identity as Jet fans.
You'll win one. You know.
Do you really care that much?
Yes.
See, I've given up a lot of my fandom, and I was a Bucks fan growing up. When they won the Super Bowl, it was much more hollow than I thought it was going to be.
I'm rating in order. Siena Field. Skidmore Field Hockey National Championship is number one on my list because my kid plays for him.
Sure.
And then a Jets Super Bowl and then a Mets World Series.
Well, you know, you'll get your Mets World Series this year. We are done. Keith Strudler, a lot of fun. Mark McGuire will look forward to the column tomorrow in the Daily Gazette. Support comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York, an independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire, featuring Pavestone to help construct outdoor living spaces, walkways, retaining walls, pool decks, edgers, fire pits, and more. Whitney'sFarm.com. Kerry Haddad Gallery, Hudson, New York, presenting Abstraction, an exhibit of paintings, photographs, and sculpture through August 23rd, open daily 11 to 5. KerryHaddadGallery.com. And SPAC, hosting the Philadelphia Orchestra through August 15th, featuring all Beethoven, Luck Be a Lady, Megan Hilty, Winter Tales, with members of the New York City Ballet, and Heavenly Journeys, SPAC.org for tickets. That's it. Thanks again to Keith Strudler and Mark McGuire. Thanks to you for listening and for calling and for emailing. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Deb Malik answered the phones. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's a Food Friday. Have a great day. Stay tuned now for a news update.